You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO is excited to be part of Willamette Week GiveGuide this year. When you support KBOO through GiveGuide, not only does it support your favorite community radio station, it also gives a little back to you in return. When you donate $10 or more, you'll get full access to hundreds of local coupons in the Chinook Book app, plus a few other goodies. Available while supplies last, so donate to KBOO on GiveGuide today at kboo.fm/give. Thanks.
Welcome to The Talking Earth here on KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Dan Raphael, first-time host. Happy to finally have a chance. Been a guest a few times, a long-time poet. You know, but they say timing's everything, and I wish I could be in the KBOO studios, which I'm a little familiar with. Every Wednesday for over 4 years now, I've been doing a fresh news poem for the KBOO Evening News on Wednesdays when I'm in town. But here I am in my room with the nice microphone my son bought me for Christmas. And so I hope this sounds all right. My main guest is a longtime local poet who has had 3 books published in 14 months. The books were Many Thing, from Unlikely Books in New Orleans, Moving with Every, which came out this June, from Flowstone Press in O'Brien, Oregon, down there near Cave Junction, and just this last month, Starting Small, from Alien Buddha Press, all hail the Alien Buddha, in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and that person is me, Dan Raphael. Again, it's COVID safe because I'm used to myself and I'll try not to cough on the microphone even though I'm the only one using it. But in order to add a little outside flavor to this show, I asked some people for questions. And Ziggy in the deep southeast asks, how has COVID affected your work? Well, COVID has somewhat become a subject, and it's also kind of a distraction. I mean, COVID, the emotional barrier of it, again, can keep us focused on it. You know, it's a distraction. Who wants to write about flowers, you know, when you're worried about people dying? I'm also glad that the election has ended. Again, that's been great political material, but it affects the emotions, it makes you worry, and really to be creative, you need to be relaxed. Also, again, with the isolation of COVID, I often write poems after movies, after concerts, poetry readings, things like that, and there just aren't those to go to, and just watching it at home or listening to something on a Zoom isn't quite the getting outside of yourself that media events provide me. And as I'm getting back into myself, I'll catch a poem, not necessarily about the event, but it's an energy matter. And it's also been sad. I really enjoy reading my work. I'm an active performer, flailing about, and these venues just aren't available these days. I mean, there are some, if you go to YouTube and search for Dan Raphael, you'll find a reading I did last month online through Annie Bloom's Books with Christopher Luna and Gina Williams. So there are some things out, but and now, since I love performing, I might as well start performing. And so here are some poems from Moving with Every. It has a flashy yellow-red cover that someone said looks like pasta. I thought it was something from a electron microscope. Again, fitting with Starting Small. It turns out it's a picture from an aquarium, but somewhat colorized. Morning Nocturne. Hills beyond the trees. I can't see them. Mild breeze, no sun. I'm not waiting for the changes. Stillness is an illusion. Stop your blood for even a second. I don't hold my breath, just hold it back as pressure builds, as breath looks for escape routes. If the sound of the tires that just passed by were a trumpet, if the highway was a drummer using brushes, I'm the bass, gently pressing one string like testing bread dough to see if it springs back. The song starts so familiar, then a wan chord of appetite. A surprising thump like a box falling from a shelf. The next verse is me leaving my chair, going to the kitchen for coffee. And poems arise because of sparks. I read something probably on Facebook by local writer Tommy Gaffney, which helped me with this poem, Falling Fast. Pedestrians crossing in the middle of the block. Big pickup bullying his way into my subcompact's right of. Construction delays popping up faster than fall mushrooms. Third shot of the day, third shirt in this third bar. More clouds in my head than the sky. When I feel comfortable enough to talk politics, it's time to leave. Sunless sky confusing my compass. Two crows almost collide. Either I walked here or my car's been stolen. How could I know the bus was a food truck with seats? I want gravity, not sauce, stew, not soup, a small bread melting butter. 3 months from now, the main differences are colder and darker. Higher utility bills, holiday stormfront approaching. I move the clock ahead 6 hours, but nothing changes. I wonder about freeways made of pasta, poisoned rivers diluted enough to just give you a buzz. Do I melt like the snow falling everywhere, stars breaking through the clouds and all the colors of Christmas tree lights? We gift-wrapped the turkey, stuffed small presents into large ones and baked them. It's last call, and the sun's barely set. I live in a part of town I call the Deep Southeast, right next to Portland's most iconic, I hate the word iconic, Portland's most iconic street, 82nd. Every city's got one. Used cars, cheap burgers, questionable groceries, frequent police, no one walking casually. More intestine than artery, more stomach than heart. 82nd's more retrograde than Mercury, though nothing moves that quickly here. Car lot banners distracting walkers from the obstacle course where a sidewalk should be, from the occasionally slowing vehicle who's not asking for directions. 82nd will never be gentrified, never unnecessary. Some things you don't want delivered to your home. Sign says Avenue of Roses, but no flowers. Business Association calls this the Jade District, though so little green here and no gems. 82nd's precious metals are cars, needles, and shopping carts. Portland's most diverse street, also its most American. I live on 78th. 82nd mostly stays on 82nd. Only the sirens there are loud enough to not be drowned out by the interstate, half a mile east. Hundreds passing every minute, with no idea what urban splendor they're avoiding. And in my room, two-way. Maybe this time, when I enter my office, I'll see myself at the desk, my window showing an unfamiliar landscape in another direction, a tunable mirror and its projecting companion. 'Cause strangers know what I look like, friends see right through me. That dogs hear and smell better than they see, all eyes need to do is alert us to movement. When sun breaks momentarily through the cloud cover, 'cause it can, 'cause the sky doesn't notice. Jeans or corduroys, a shirt without buttons, often under one width. Back in my office, its loose door twitches from the pressure of the kitchen door opening as I get back from the gym. You know, if you're on Facebook like I am, it's always somebody's birthday. Someone else's birthday. Pay what you want, but you have to eat all of it. The server doesn't know the ingredients, not even the blindfolded chef opening the braille-labeled meal packs, boiling on the inside, steam without water, light without glass. The key is spending most of your time indoors alone, away from people, not looking where they are. Assuming physics doesn't apply, momentum equals right of way, my clothes reveal a lack of legal counsel. as if those who died in the womb chose to, as if most people have a choice about parenting, and genetic transfer is not a time-space phenomenon beyond our biologically limited perspective. I didn't know there was an elevator till the wall slid open. I thought the only direction was up. We're all invisible sometimes, intuiting when not to look in the mirror or to try and pick up a solid object. I can only get so far, a line my hand shouldn't cross. If I screamed, not even I would hear me. First time I came to Oregon, we were from Ohio and headed to Ashland. So we did the back route through Nevada, and then you see that sign, you know, next gas 80 miles. And they meant it. Before the signs. Next gas 80 miles. Next fresh food at least 10 miles from the highway. Hope I brought enough water and sunscreen. If no gloves or maps, what do I put in there? License plates replaced with barcodes. I curl up in the back seat and give the van 5 hours to surprise me. Home on wheels, wheels addicted to asphalt, hoping for a lightning storm to jump me. When the wind shifts, when 2% of the raindrops have legs big enough to drive under. One T leads to another. The few hills left will collapse soon. I'll keep going till I'm asked who I am. The ATM spat my card back. The bird that's been following since Reno isn't a bird. Mistaking a river for a winding road. No windows, just video screens. All the exhaust comes from me. Edible seat cover, a roof that holds 10 gallons, just an hour north of destiny. I'm cool with doom, Mark Sargent. I drool when I come. I command with rules, lures, and lore. As the earth opens, quick, rancid jaws repulsed and cauterized by a buoyant light and oxygen. The threatening unpredictability of more than 3 lungs. 3 wings, a colony of rolling dogs, this cross-cultural omelet with lamb, eels, and vegan cheese. When you have to break through the plasma to get to the shell, liberating a swimming pool, turning a dam into a drive-in, dive-in. Who needs diversion when you're facing the omega, the OMG of edges, where the only not falling is an inner stillness deep as the Marianas Trench? Is the opposite of doom good fortune, gluttony, overpopulation, a democracy none of us voted for, much a doom about nothing, when death takes a cruise and the shoreline sneak further away? I'm not Dr. Doom, Mount Doom, Joe DiMaggio, Doomal Trump, but I'm too cool to even twitch when something sounds like my name. That bass no one else is hearing, or they'd be dancing like I am, inside the canyons of our long bones. My eyes are geodesic dooms, omnidirectional oblivion. I'm in the mood for doom, simply because I'm so close to something, this large and powerful I can't see, hear, or smell, the way cats walk soundlessly across a room. You know they're not moving. Everything buddy else is. I'm not cool with not being the center of momentum, being part of the silenced majority. Most of what I pay is what I'm not allowed to receive, damned and diverted for me to irrigate what's already so lush. It takes dozens of silent or doomed to maintain the counterflow, the drainage and suppression, meters that keep spinning when no one's been home for years. And I'll close with the next to last poem from the book, dedicated to East Coast poet Mark Hartenbach. I stole a few lines from. The State Fitness Rehab Warehouse. Inside the blue light, Outside the walls you don't know will bounce back, electrify, scratch, run against an invisible truck, bring down hunks of sky that won't let go of the hands, the hawks or eyebrows, the mouse an unopened paragraph. My stomach feels like a blanket used for smoke signals. The brightest light is usually the first to be shot out. If you're going to pray for a clean slate, why not no slate, no video, no mobile tattoos engraving sand, air, and lumber, when the only writing implement is a bleeding finger? No fire to burn, wood long gone, burning plastic fumes of past industrial glory, off-gassing their phantom nutrition. I'm streamlined, moving before I move, as unison as the wind's billion fibers, colliding but never clotting. These constant currents on the globe, one block in diameter, hovering over a dark distant screen that could be sky, confection, fermentation, a window no one looks through twice. Riding my bat suit through Manhattan canyons with five directional winds and no stoplights, no anti-gravity taxis to sub-Jersey, the Atlantic pedicured Miss Liberty, the Pacific shaped its battering ram of beachfront mansions as Arizonans drummed the earth with their peristaltic stomps, betting on one disaster to cancel another, planting the peel and snorting the seeds. It's my week in the fitness warehouse, aching phantom limbs on a Jimmy treadmill that never comes up cherries. Not a heart monitor, but lie detector and credit check, serpenting my core for the approaching squats, thrusts, and curls. Who knew sweat held so much oxygen? I'm skinned in leaves, my barking sapless bones wanged by cubist cables of fluid simultaneity and transit, as if multiple heres are heresy. All the windows, reinforced plexiglass, or a designer drug that hasn't hit the street yet. Mirage seductively tossing off unborn shrunken heads, entrails of Tijuana and Liverpool, realigning participatory gravity with genetic debt through the spinal paradox of my commuting cells. Biotime tithing this particulate evolution, with so much faster than us, each of our bodies at least a planet, multi-mooned, million-satellited. I'm a tripping, steadfast beast tribe, leaning into the light of transformation without falling all the way through, the event but not the horizon. Our bodies were not meant to bake, separating the tender from the accumulated. If death was by committee, we could live forever and never be alive, waiting in the weight room, confusing exercise with exorcism, when the task doesn't fit the body, when the mind doesn't fit the institution, no question what goes, what stays. And that's from Starting Small, Alien Buddha Press. Another question. Jim in Crestwood asks, what happens in terms of your consciousness during a heightened time of riding? Heightened is a good word because it is alternate. I mean, I'm not really thinking. I mean, I'm really focused. The words are flowing out of me. I mean, I sometimes think I'm serving as a conduit for the language, which I see in a sort of Jungian term as being a container of intelligence, civilization. You know, everything that has been done with language is still in language or resonating there one way or another. So it's all a question of getting into that state. Sometimes I feel like I'm just building up. I mean, I'm always playing with words in my mind, switching letters around, doing little puns, things like that. But I just can't sit down and write a poem. I mean, I have surprised myself with the cable news poems I've been doing for over four and a half years now, because, you know, it's like the deadline poet. Usually write the night before, sometimes the morning of. Some days I don't think there's going to be one, but there always is. I'm a kind of consistent guy. Once I get a habit, it's hard to shake loose. And so, yeah, but, you know, like the spark comes, and then I'm writing the stuff down, You know, these days, more of it happens at home, so I'm typing, which is good because my handwriting is pretty illegible. There's always, when I write a poem originally in my journal, there's always a few words I'm not quite sure of, and some I never really find. But, you know, and like when I was going to movies, I would get out of the movie, ride in my car, start my car, and then, you know, have to stop at some point on the way home, pull over and write some more, write the rest, and then run home. And, you know, and sometimes reading the poem itself can spark a continuation. So it isn't always just one sit for a poem. Another question, which kind of relates. Leanne and Laurelhurst asks, how much does audience or readership affect your words? If the answer is not at all, then you're saying it's solely about you? Well, the answer is not at all, because I'm really not thinking about much when I'm writing, you know, just the words and the flow, trying to keep up with it. So it's not solely about me, and it's not mostly about me. It's about the language. Again, I do assume that if I get the language right, if I let the language be itself, which means a lot of my editing is taking me out, you get these cute phrases or these little tricks you do, and you go, oh, that was nice, let's do one or two more. But that's not where the poem is going. The poem's not in the tricks, it's in the flow. And so I have to kind of pull myself out. So I just feel when I get the poem done right, there will be an audience for it, that the words will be right, that you know, someone will appreciate it, either be surprised, energized, you know, get their own ideas. I think one of the main goals of my poetry is just to try and foster creativity, seeing things in new ways, taking language to places it's never been. So, yeah. But, you know, again, trying to get outside of me. Let me now introduce the other poet today, who isn't live, but he read on my porch, my good friend James Grable. His new book is called Branches Shaken by Light. This is the 12th or 14th published book of Jim's from Cyberwit in India. They actually solicited him to send them a book, which is pretty neat, as you writers would know. And Jim's expecting another book early next year and another one later next year. So he's in the flow as well. Jim's two previous books were Sea Level Nerves 1 and 2 from Wordcraft of Oregon out in La Grande. And these are two books of environmental prose poems. Jim is, over the last decade or more, has been really interested in ecology, sustainability. Does our planet have a future? He taught for a good stretch of time at Clackamas Community College, where besides writing, he also taught Shakespeare and taught and made a sustainability curriculum for the school. So here's James Grable.
I'm going to begin with some poems from a book that was published in India a few months ago called Branches Shaken by Light. Grocery. Surely galactic chemistry was created out of being within being. You'd want to think this in the holiest way you could, we were taught. But the moon's eye neither opens nor closes, existing simply as is, while the brain invests in it, the moon glowing with primitive hope over hundreds of thousands of years since the birth of mammals. Surely the afternoon in the grocery goes as expected, its wildfire fighter on the bread aisle, the young widow in a raincoat near the freezer doors dropping boxes into her loaded cart, the actuary with engine red hair studying stakes, the skinny woman in her father's graying undershirt, the woman in her aqua ball gown on the kitchen facilitation aisle, talking on a small black phone in a Russian dialect. These people are parts of us, and we're parts of them. Where day becomes night and complex breathing, which makes the minute and hour indissoluble, unique, ourselves glowing in communication with sister stoma of leaves and clear knowledge and eyes of the species that specialize in what they've learned. Turn a little further into this book. This is called a reverberating string. Touch a string on the instrument that makes sense out of being, and know yourself a live extension of everything you might detect. Recognize the home that exists wherever your eyes have landed, under the vast, archaic rivers of alien stars swallowed by infinity. Hold the human hand, which is half genetic animal, half what it holds, after climbing with a native bee through the heart of the blossom. In this way, sitting on the catacombs, the thinker leans his head on his fist and senses how young Venus is on her seashell the size of a life raft, while the violin without a musician still has the west wind, when people have always just begun to learn what they know. Riveting arc. This has an epigram from Lauren Hollander. The universe is shaped the way it would sound. He's the pianist who was a prodigy and went through a period where he was alone for over a year in a cabin with a piano, playing the notes, letting the sounds enter his body. He just had to take a break from being a virtuoso. Anyway, just letting the music enter the body and then knowing it inside out. The hunger of offspring who'll need more time to recover from refineries. The dusk that spreads through river valley apples, ripening into a future, maybe a nebula of multiple spiraling galaxies as wheeling carries away the masses, the involuntary birth sins well-preserved, towering carbon histories, the preponderance of oil-soaked fertility and untested boilerplate chemistry, cavernous feastings on discontent that tore into tiger grasses, the rise of bioluminescent underground from vented biochemical vaults, sun that survives spectroscopic torque and tents of old English oxygens, the enormous transformation streaming after up and down thresholds, the sacred antiquity between interdependent co-equal opposites in mind, the umbilical of breathing on the ground within lucidity as glaciers melt into insinuation of small ribs of a feather, or trans-contemplation, centering Lauren Hollander at the keyboard, letting each chord sound within depths. where Van Gogh painted with fire. Van Gogh dipped his brushes into multiple colors of live fire. He applied the vision that emerged where he was created by this spiral octopus arm of the galaxy. He found he could see every day there thicken into long-range night, as egg-cracked and heating up bad as anyone, when unknown colors interpose beaten raggedness and tanned megalithic halls of mammoth animal hide camouflage of the body remaining wild when it's this instant the senses exceed. Under the last railroad cannonball lanterns, the wind have rolling in rustled exposures that aim at the horizon for the newborn overflow. Unfinished, practicing mesmerism as it bends over the infant in her crib behind the human face, in the place still the inheritance of old paraphernalia and all the money in the world spent on a centuries-old jawbone of a former bat, hearing solid phenomena echo out of cracks in the climate, unsettled and small enough to overpower the silver fork on a china plate, to endure protracted suffering of others every year going past in a flush of the origin with its lake floor raven flying on gargantuan, wormy underground wings, giving us names to be learning, to keep learning live, which is where Van Gogh was, I think, when he applied his flaming saturations to long-range survival in the place that heals the unreachable wound of having been born. Blooming August with the radio on. The wisteria sips from the fountain of bees. As bees nuzzle between the wisteria petals, barely touching the inside of beauty, trying on every blue hat in the shop. The neighborhood kids are running and standing around the oak, playing Man and Superman on the rope over the scuffed ground, the dug furs over the car going nowhere but where it is at the moment. The first U.S. gold medal, it turns out, is for shooting. The book by the former military insider is called How Everything Became War and the Military Became Everything. Moments later, the Wynton Marsalis Quartet performs Sunflowers, a piece that repeatedly begins with a tune like seeds planted. Past a point, the horns follow sunflower stalks into the air, stretching higher and past that, way up, into solar yellow with red-orange fractal edges. They're not so much spreading out from the center in a multiplied atonal chord as joining together with the heavy weight of light. After a while, that far over the ground, they return to the tune, planting seeds. It's a great song. Braided rug in the front room. And thanks to Dan, who included this in a book, a chapbook he published of mine a while back. Returning home to the braided rug made from abandoned skirts, from saved coats and curtains that weren't usable anymore, people's lives, the makings, colors of people's care, all cut, turned, and woven into the huge rug of threads still moving with breath, with handholds and walking, all the miles in the rug, and feel of breasts and chests under it all, feel of the legs of so many walking toward this time, this weaving, circling the room beneath us, the sky seen when a boy went out, the lake waiting when numbers fell through, the yellow page, the diving of thinkers, the blue jays seen, the clef of the universes, from Whitman, having been felt in colors of squash, of hornet bodies, of evening peppermint, wood grain touched, where sound comes in, a few years that this still might be. The dark reds, silverware washed in water, the graying blue, the simple talk, the hotel green, the scent of fuel in heavy pant legs, the keen thickness and wind of the moon felt, branches of the ocean heard, the foreheads kissed, apples sliced, the mountains smoldering. In fog, a drop of rain gives to a purple in the rug, braided from those who have gone forward, leaving this blue jay blue, this money green gray, with gold brown or black of this hair of earth braided, this roping from inside short stories, this asking of unseen people, circling, making a center in the center. And this is from a book that will appear from Raw Art Review, and the book's called Eye of the Spiral. And these are sections from a poem called Double Helix, Meditation on Life, you know. The properties of molecules have them moving, snapping into Indonesian peat forests, locking them into machinery of dragonflies in a gnat's eyes, one with another, one joining the next, one life to the next one life. They never stop swimming out on their fins, going often on hyena hunts, grains pouring, dunes rolling at the foot of water, sloping carbons through overhead vocabularies that turn into western rain, mineral infinitesimal dusts that pepper the lips and working tongues, drawn as inclination is to centers of solidity, of something over nothing. As fir trees in their uproar from the origin donate all they've been to the present. Roots send up their green flames, shaping reach in the compound complex instant, symbiotic cells deciding in flux, buffering adrenaline spikes and ontological stews. They appear unable to stop, reaching out in organic symmetry, letting mind emerge, not from an exact location in the brain, but through spontaneous overflow of all parts, continually out of compass core, biochemical matters, vibratory and concentrated, tended by transpolar circulation of oceans, warmed by transmutations, the cells carrying us and sharing these eyes, where we're taking them in the world.
So now another question for me. From this one's from Rick in Hillsdale. He asks, where do you get your inspiration for creating? Are you motivated by current events, something you read walking down the street or living life? Or is the process a form of escape from the day-to-day reality that we all find ourselves confined in? Well, I don't really write to escape. I mean, I see writing as sort of my peak experience of energy, so it's just being the best I can be or just being the most alive. It can be feel kind of ecstatic. I've been called an ecstatic poet. I love the energy of it and pulling it out. As for what inspires it, yeah, maybe it is just an accumulation of seeing things. Again, I write about news for my cable news poems, which are not really great poems, more like little editorials, but they're fun. And again, it's more keeping an emotional balance. Sure, I think you have to maybe shut out the rest of the world to get the poetry, to get the art, to get the spark that starts everything rolling. And so in that way, yeah, everyday life. But no escape, the opposite of escape. Again, current events work their way in. You hear phrases. So it is a bit, I see my work as being somewhat collagic at times, you know, like a collage of phrases here and there as jumps, might be different voices talking. And let's just move into that other voice. My book that came out this June, Moving with Every, wish you could see the cover. Well, all the books have nice covers. Moving with Every has a painting by Native American Seattle painter-artist John Strongbow of a bunch of brightly colored jellyfish floating over the I-5 in Seattle. And they are moving with every, as I will be here. Start with, I was lucky a couple years ago to get two residencies at Summer Lake out in Lake County, middle of nowhere, beautiful isolation. And this one's from there. Third morning. I missed the moonrise because I didn't know where to look. The mercury in my eyes. Not a skeptical compass, but a belief in square that works better in the city. If I only had to swim back once. If I took a long time in circling and the subtler movements of time changed just enough, I entered the wrong state. Like when we visited relatives in a newer suburb and I walked into a stranger's house. When I look in the mirror and see someone else, it's time to either wake up or accept this unfamiliar collar. Shoes bouncier, a five-legged cat doesn't make me sneeze. Here the GPS uses the Cyrillic alphabet. That's not a decimal point, but a poppy seed. I draw arrows in the carpet, but next day they're circles. Run through my open door and interrupt foreplay. I could follow my nose, but coffee is everywhere. Leave room for milk? I don't know. Am I gluten-free, lactose intolerant, only eating three colors a day depending on the stars? When Mercury goes retrograde, I binge and purge. For the full moon, I fast. This morning's ice melts in total denial. No clocks, no calendar. My pulse is thready and speaking in several voices. Why do I have to duck for every door? Some windows won't open. All three along this wall are aquaria, one with tiny water-breathing mice of many shiny colors. When the second sun rises, approaching chartreuse, I admire the thick sienna fur on the back of my hands. My dreams were crowded with recipes. Breakfast is about to land. And now back to a more familiar neighborhood, Southeast Portland. Quote, I hear the music of sorcerers trapped in the bowels of herons. George Hitchcock. Heron sighting is rare for me. Occasionally near the river where I seldom go, music is everywhere, but almost all of it pours directly to single pairs of ears, leaking whispers and fuzzy bass. Actual sorcerers don't show their hands, unlike would-be apprentices thinking smartphones or wands. Yet 10-year-old connections suddenly revealed, multiple identities, threads that spark, a deja vu you can't walk around. My wings camouflage as a plaid shirt, all my willpower keeping me from going through the fish market window. I want a coat that keeps out the cold but lets music flow both ways undistorted. I want glasses that let me see what's swimming beneath the sidewalk, what's flying barely treetop, invisible above a sky that doesn't bother to dress because so few ever look at it. A bass riff twitches through my fingertips like a perch just close enough to surface. Where I live is across the street from a schoolyard, and I get to watch other people's dogs play without having to clean up from them, waiting for the DNA test. Could I count the black dogs in the field if they stop moving, or is it just two or three dogs displaying simultaneously all the places they've been and will be there, chasing the ball of the sun, playing tug of war with a hank of river? The crows near the homeless camp know me, breaking open a plastic bag of rain-soaked bagels and pastries so more could eat as more fly in. And one of our oak, tormented by squirrels, strip-searched, gnawed, then expected to provide shelter in a hole or crotch. Who else is living there, not counting the moss machines, the insect processes? But I don't mean bees, more functional and intelligent than we could ever, no matter how we choose to miniaturize, to export natural functions to devices we can never fix, only upgrade. Is there a mammal whose skin no one ever wore? A bird whose feathers didn't decorate some body? The tree my door came from, the ice that became my window? When a dog's tail is wagging, where are his teeth? When I think it's night, but my windows are covered with crows, as flesh as a veil, as clothes announce our sadness, that having so little fur and no feathers at all, just these thick bones to withstand small collisions and keep us chained to the earth we seldom rise from, seldom run across full speed, trailing slobber, dust, and fleas of random memory. I drive a mile to the thirsty dog. The bartender asks if I'm a service animal. Or might I be in season? Yeah. And again, the poems are kind of ordered just in a way of complexity, intensity. So here's another one that was written back in Central Oregon, though it applies broadly. Rain at the border. No asphalt to tell me if it rained. No radio, the birds still in bed, wind workers change shifts so incrementally the train never has to stop, not encircling the world, but showing ways to peel it. When 1,000 miles of momentum meets a 4,000-foot wall, do you go left, right, or up? Put a little of my skin on the deck and see what happens, wind loss, absorption, biomagnetic drift. The ants and flies are still asleep, but this many clouds leave little room for anyone else. Any minute a door could open, a phone that only I could hear could ring, invitation implied. Chairs must be filled, or they lose interest and start talking to trees that don't grow here. Legs get hungry, remembering bark long gone, as if my bones were wood, not tunnels made from grit the sea swallowed but could never digest. Like the grit wind uses as sandpaper, though neither a pleasant abrasive, keeping the dissenting minority dispersed and busy. Spherical compasses, adrift in raindrops, kept in solitary till they don't think of themselves as water anymore, that they're made of something we don't name out of ignorance or fear. It's always been this way. Rain does work no one else wants to. Some things no one else can. Never needing to knock, keep statistics, or show ID. No one asks rain how it got here, but then worry it might never leave. Yeah. You know, sometimes the inspiration for a poem is like a quote from somebody. Color ads with pictures of genuine shamans wearing cool hats. Mark Sargent. Catalog, dating site, mug shots. Every channel I turn to is a face, some in such extreme focus I think I'm viewing a desert, a mud flat, a long untended parking lot. occasional flashes of seeing the world in black and white, as if a short in my picture tube, a retina-soaked retina. While I'd hoped for a flamboyant hybrid iris, I got the native iris fetida, aroma bigger than its flowers, bright orange seeds barely a compensation and more of a threat. 'Cause I know, no matter how often and vigorously I sneeze, a fraction of the cause, things my body either doesn't know how or doesn't want to dance with, gets through, usually without a map or much company. All these one-way doors, these sluices defying gravity, the constant echoes of that four-valve piston mighty in the drum of my ribcage. Whether what we call visions are revisions, disillusions, spontaneous surrealism, I'm never safe from the concrete edge, the invisible glass of beer, the extra step the staircase added this morning. When I need to let something unnamed but pressurized out of my body, and I don't know what door it's closest to, or how many obstacles between me and an outdoors I don't have to clean later, where my clothes will dissolve and I'll be cured like a ham, obscured by the clouds released when my body turns inside out, clouds that draw the rain, leaves and dust up to them in a moire of pattern stripes, was constantly intersecting, writhing, skin-shedding, micro-express tube tracks, God forbid the star hamsters would ever invade, shimmering like an all-terrain Medusa helmet, with multi-channel eyes that can make those who see them stone, edible, compliant, insatiable, repulsed. You not only have to pay to play, you have to pay to work, to stay hydrated and arrive with most of what you left home with. I fly to the place of organic prelingual magic and sip my bowl of shaman rama until the truth comes by, with an offer I can barely afford. Hallelujah. A word for snow on a planet without water. Molten gases, frozen gases. We're spinning into new states of matter. Don't matter. Mouse merging like a river coming through both sides of our heads. Not water falls, but water rises. Not like geysers, not a temperature you could take. Fly a mile with my wings. Steal my car and don't put gas in it. The new species of my feet slowly coming into focus. I'm not a mummy, but a man wrapped in tissue paper. Will the wind or rain naked me first? Light going through me with only minor abrasions, almost cursive, indicative, a hand spread wide and parallel to the earth, but not the sky. As I study the clouds' topography, look for the clearest path. With skin this porous, who needs a mouth or an orchestra? The windows don't shatter, but sigh. I don't open the door, but peel it in slow strips like a chanterelle. You can't make one, just let it grow where death or fire. No growth without shedding, conifers dropping seeds and recipes disguised as calendars rolled into prayer beads. Which one will open? Which one will say om or amen as this orange, bright as the sun, falls into my hand without burning? I have enough electricity in me to run several lights and a television. I have to show ID across the street, convince the cook that bread's not impossible without grain, fluid, or a room too hot to walk through, where the earth's love leaks, where the choirs of evaporation can hold their notes for hours, so much harmony no one can hear more than a fraction, and still we're overwhelmed, almost bowing. Close with this one, where the title, at least, was inspired by the B-52s. My own private climate crisis. The sun's stuck in traffic. Time's taking the weekend off, so we can't get paid or find new things to watch. If I go out the door, I won't be able to get back in till Tuesday. Even breath gets boring. The same sandwich, mayo but no mustard, ketchup made from tanker cars. We learned to turn paper into meat, then stopped reading newspapers and books. Crows don't usually fly that high, so it's either an African-American superhero or a dark, silent drone. All this information gathered from ourselves proves we can live even closer together. When the electricity stops flowing, how sweet will be the view from your 12-story condo with immovable windows, and how even more beautiful your legs will become. To protect my house, I'm camouflaging it to look derelict and dangerous. Every week I put the same empty shotgun shell package in my recycling. My stomach's been remodeled from a single-family dwelling to 7 studios. Every hour of the day, someone's sleeping, someone's peeling back the curtains to see if their window can be touched or seen through. I didn't realize I had glaciers in me till they started to recede and melt, as if those giant prehistoric ferns percolating near my brain's core would remain undrilled, burning memory for temporary escape. As my inner coastlines rise, my accumulated indigestibles huddle close enough to spontaneously erupt. Most of my ambitions have become refugees, camping on barren ground with a million others. I'm aware of my internal pentagon, but know I must have one. My personal Gaza is somewhere I can either reach or see. When I take off my clothes, you see no nations, no structures, maybe the Andes of my spine, the Himalayas of my stomach. Instead of tattoos, I'm having chlorophyll-producing cells implanted wherever I can afford. Fashion-wise, green is the new black and earth firsters the new goss. Whoever thought snow globes would become both precious anachronisms and cult meditation tools? Cool is warmer than ever. When I'm happy, I can almost believe the constant smoke and dust is a 20% chance of rain. When I weep, my eyes get so dry I can't keep them open. So yeah, that's from Moving with Every, from Flowstone Press, available from the press itself. All three of my books are unfortunately available through Amazon, which I hate as a company, but got to get books somewhere. Powell's and Broadway Books have copies of many things, so shop around, please. If you want to hear more of me, you can search for Dan Raphael on YouTube. There's a real nice two readings blended together from many things. It's called Dan Raphael in Alabama and Louisiana, which was done last fall. As I said, there's also there a reading through Annie Bloom's bookstore that I did last month with Christopher Luna and Gina Williams. Tomorrow, somewhere, I'll be online at a Zoom reading for the anthology Take a Stand, political poems from Raven Chronicles up in Seattle. Great, great, great book. And then on Thursday, I'll be reading from Phantom Drift magazine is doing a reading online too. So things are still available. Again, you just gotta keep looking. One quick question, Rick in Hillsdale asks, what is the role of the poet in society? Heck, what's the role of artists in any society? Some honor them, some don't. We all gotta get paid. Sometimes you're able to do what you want to do even if you don't get paid for it. Have your passion. I've never taught. I worked for DMV for 32 years. How poetic is that? But hey, thanks to James Grable for coming in and reading from his new book, Branches Shaken by Light. Thanks to Patrick Bocard for helping to engineer this thing. Thanks to the stalwarts of Talking Earth, Walt Curtis and Barbara Lamorticella, for giving me this opportunity. And especially, as I say after most of my readings, it's easy to find poets to read, but hard to find people to listen to them. So thank you out there, whoever, wherever you are, for listening to the Talking Earth here at KABU in Portland, Oregon. Listener supported. Thanks to all you supporting listeners. Good night.
listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Cubby Cushy, Cubby Cush, Tuesday nights on KBOO.